We'll go ahead and get started with today's presentation. I want to welcome everyone and thank you for joining us. Today's presentation is the EU General Data Protection Regulation, or the GDPR, is coming. What you need to do now. Our presenters today are Rafi Azim Khan and Steve Farmer. Rafi is a partner in our London and Silicon Valley offices, and he is also head of the Data Privacy Europe. Rafi has co-authored 5 books in the areas of e-business, regulation of the internet, and data protection, and he is also chair of the Law Forum for Transatlantic Trade Body British American Business, in which capacity he is currently liaisoning with data regulators on the GDPR. Steve Farmer is a counsel in our London office who works closely with Rafi and has many years' experience of data protection matters. I'll now turn the presentation over to Rafi.
Thanks very much, Erin. Appreciate it. Just like to say thank you to everyone for making the time to join. I can see we actually have quite a lot of attendees now logged on. So good morning or good afternoon, wherever you may be dialing in from. GDPR, it's obviously a hot topic. It's an area of interest. And I think as the implementation date creeps around, it's an area that more and more businesses are turning their attention to. And what we thought we were going to try and do with this particular session was effectively present a practical take on things to try and give some key points, some key takeaways, so that hopefully by the time we get to the end of this session, you'll have on your radar screens a few key action items perhaps. And actually as we go through it, what I wanted to do was also debunk a few myths, cut through some of the confusion which we're picking up from talking to clients, talking to different companies. Just to take one step back and look at things in the round, I think there is a real sense of deja vu here, certainly for me, sort of revealing my age a little bit, but certainly I can recall in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we had the original e-commerce boom and the real dot-com boom back then, many businesses, many companies were struggling with what was then the first very prescriptive set of rules in the terms of the Data Protection Directive. This is the original Data Protection Directive and Data Protection Act and implementation legislation around Europe, which was also coupled at that time with the e-commerce directive that was coming through, the distance selling directive, the e-signatures directive, and so on. Basically, the rules of the road that were being presented at that time to try and help businesses get online, engage in electronic forms of doing business, really embrace e-commerce. And back then, there was so much to try and get one's head around that many businesses were a little bit stuck in terms of knowing what practically to do. 20 years on, effectively, we now have this new tsunami of obligations, of new penalties and fines. And again, I get the distinct impression that many businesses are sort of stuck in the headlights a little bit in terms of not really knowing how to best go at it and best make sure that they are doing what they need to do. Erin mentioned one aspect, which is the role that we have and the role I have as chair of the Law Forum for British American Business. Now, that trade group represents businesses on the US side as well as on the European side, ranging from the largest companies through to small SMEs. And in that capacity, we've been very, very closely liaising with a number of the data commissioners, the actual enforcers. And that's not just been this year, but it's been in the run-up through the various changes over the recent years. So we had a lot of liaison with Chris Graham when he was the Information Commissioner in the UK, and then also with Elizabeth Denham now that she's taken over. And in fact, just last week, we had a one-to-one meeting with Elizabeth just to swap notes on what practically are the key issues, what are the genuine hot-button issues from the enforcer's standpoint, what are the areas most likely to attract fines or to attract enforcement action. And I'm going to try and, if you like, prioritize as we go through this some of those key points, because as I said, there's so much to go at, it can be confusing. The other piece, which I think is very important and very worth considering, is that at the moment there is a bit of a there's a bit of an avalanche of tools and toolkits and software providers, consultants. There is definitely a lot of noise out there, which can be quite confusing for the legal teams, for the information teams, the ICO teams. And I think what we're going to try and do is, again, prioritize what should be the areas of focus with all of that. So with no further ado, let's get going. What I would say is this won't be a line-by-line read-through of all of the copy in the slides. We've deliberately gone quite heavy with some of the information on some of the slides, and that's for you to digest afterwards. If you have any questions, we will have some time for questions at the end of the webinar, so we'll probably save up most of those queries for then. But also feel free to reach out to either Steve or myself subsequently if something occurs to you in terms of a particular query. Okay, so let's get going. So I think the key thing really to start off with is to say big topic. We could have a whole day on this. In fact, you can go to conferences and have 2, 3, 4 days on GDPR. There is so much to digest. But I think there is, as I mentioned in the opening remarks, I think there is this large degree of noise. There's some confusion, some misleading information out there as well in terms of what you should be practically looking to do. And I think in terms of sort of debunking some of those myths, I think the first thing really to say right up, so one of the, if you leave with nothing other than 2, 3, 4, 5 points, I would really stress the point there in terms of myths and mis-selling of tools. We have been actively engaged with many leading companies who are engaging on GDPR projects or GDPR programs. And just by way of example, a few weeks ago we were having some liaison with the GDPR head at Google, the leads for a bunch of other leading, very significant companies. And one of the things which they were sharing was the sense of frustration over consultants and software tools that were being pushed very hard to them as a silver bullet solution, or as something which would be something they could sign up to or effectively buy in, and that it would allow them to be, in quotes, GDPR compliant. And the more sophisticated individuals who were really sort of deep into the detail of it understood that actually that was really not the right approach. And in fact, in the meeting we had with Elizabeth Denham, one of the key points being stressed was that when the regulators or the enforcers are actually looking at businesses to see what did you actually do to try and comply, what can you show us in terms of what you've done, what steps have you taken, one of the absolute things that they do not want to see is a business effectively saying, well, the IT department brought in some software, we actually had some consultants come in and we applied some dashboards or some of these funky looking tools, for want of a better word, and we're all fine. What they actually want to see is a bespoke approach. They want to see a demonstration of an accountability assessment. And I'll come back to accountability because that is one of the big sea change items that the GDPR brings in. And they want to see that actually what you've done as a business is to take on board the need to be very tailored, very specific, and very focused in terms of the privacy by design or privacy by default understanding and implementation. And again, I'll come back in a moment on some specifics on that. But I think if you take nothing else away from here, just bear in mind that you know, you'll be bombarded with a lot of noise out there, a lot of stuff which isn't necessarily the right thing to be doing. The better approach is to look to take a very tailored, specific approach to what data are you actually using, how are you using it, how are you moving it around, what are you doing to identify what the new data subject rights might be and how you might need to respond or change as a business, and then what are you doing on the issues such as security, and how you deal with third parties, how you deal with service providers, have you outsourced anything, do you need to revise contracts, and so on. And then the international piece mentioned on that slide, which you can see, the international transfer piece, that is another very, very important piece of the jigsaw puzzle, which is, are you moving data around, not just within the EU, are you sending it to the States, is it crossing the Atlantic, is it going further afield, what are you doing globally? And I think on that piece, a really important aspect of that is going to be BCRs. For those of you who are familiar with that, that's binding corporate rules. Binding corporate rules being one of the most prominent means for legally moving data around internationally that has now been specifically blessed in the GDPR. And on that slide you'll see there it says seriously considered, and we'll have a little bit more detail in a moment, but I think again a key takeaway is if you haven't seriously considered BCRs, now would be a very, very good time to do so, for various reasons, not least of which will be the fact that as you try and get your heads around what you need to do to comply with the GDPR in any event, there will be a number of things that you're going to be doing which will actually put you in a position to potentially apply for BCRs if that's what you want to do. And to flip it the other way around, if you are thinking about applying for BCRs, most of what you will do to get yourself in a position to file a BCR application, which would obviously give its own benefits in terms of your international transfers, a bulk of that activity would put you in a very good position to be GDPR compliant in any event. And if you do actually get BCRs approved, it's very, very strong evidentially to showing that you have complied with the GDPR, and so massively reduces your risk profile on that side of things. So they're a little bit hand in glove. For some companies, it might not be wholly appropriate, but for many companies, it is something to seriously consider. And then at the end of the session, when we get to the final piece, we'll leave you some key summary points, specifically on what we think you should be practically doing in terms of active steps now, and as I mentioned, some things to avoid. Okay, let's move on. So some nutshell points. Bear in mind that this is coming into force very soon. We actually have a countdown of a year, almost exactly a year, in fact, from today. So the clock is ticking. In terms of being aware of how much time you have to get things right, just be aware of the aspect that it is a direct effect regulation this time. There was a perception amongst the lawmakers and a perception amongst the enforcers that many international businesses, particularly US businesses, and particularly many on the West Coast, some of the leading internet and web names that you can think of, there had been a process of a lot of run-ins with a lot of the enforcers. And so there was a sense of losing patience with businesses that were operating in a way that was happy to target European consumers, happy to do business in Europe, but in some respects, as the enforcers, as the regulators saw it, not actually fully complying. And so what they've actually done is they have specifically extended the international reach of the regulation. So it's direct effect, it will come in immediately. There will be no grace period of implementation, which typically happens with directives. So they're going to expect people to comply immediately. The reach has been specifically extended in a direct effect manner. So even if you are based outside of the EU, even if you have no staff members, if you have no employees, if you don't have any branch offices and so on, if you're just completely US-based but you are still looking to monitor European consumers, European customers, if you're looking to do any business with them, but even if you're not actually taking any cash, you're simply tracking and attracting interest and otherwise monitoring EU customers and contacts, you're going to be caught. The fine levels specifically have been set at a very high level. So the headlines that most people will be familiar with will be the atomic bomb fine levels of 4% of global revenue or turnover. or a 20 million euro fine, whichever is the higher. So bear that in mind, it's whichever is the higher. And even the smaller level fines are still very, very material. And I'll come on to some of those specifics on the fines later on. And I think a really important point at the last two bullet points on that slide, the biggest fines, the highest fines, have been reserved specifically for an inability to show a tailored, focused approach that demonstrates the accountability principles. So if you remember on the previous slide, I mentioned one of the sea changes is this concept of accountability. That really is a cornerstone of all of this. And if you can't show a tailored approach to privacy by design, privacy by default, baking it into your business, baking it into your processes, showing that you changed things in readiness for GDPR, and showing that you totally got on board, that it wasn't a quick fix, it wasn't a cookie cutter approach, that you did this tailored approach. If you can't show that, that will be directly linked to the highest levels of fines. So the highest levels of fines are specifically reserved for an inability to show that tailored, specific approach and actions. So as I've emphasized there, no cookie cutter approach is going to work here. Likely impacts, again, if you had to really boil it down in terms of what are the key impacts of this, definitely going to impact how you actually use the data and how you collect it. There are a bunch of obligations around being very transparent, explaining in a much better way, in a different way, why you're collecting, what you're proposing to do with it, how you're going to move it around. Again, the transfer piece is really important. You're going to have to analyze and take a look at your IT systems. You're going to need to look at your security aspects of it, particularly your systems, your controls, how do people access your systems. And then also a lot of practical action points. Specifically, you're going to need to look at your policies. You're going to need to look at your data privacy notices and data privacy policies. You're going to need to update your terms and conditions, certainly T&Cs on websites, general terms and conditions as well, separate from that. You're going to need to look at consents. You probably will have read that the rules on cookies and tracking and monitoring are all being updated as well. So you're going to need to look at cookie notices as well. You need to look at specifically consents on their own. So if someone is looking to engage in business with you, if they're a customer, even if you're just attracting initial interest or people are just registering on a website, you need to look at the how you're actually capturing and logging the consents. The rules on consents are changing. And you're going to need to look at updating and reviewing your websites and any of your social media activity. Certainly how you go about marketing, how you go about advertising, how you go about lead generation, how you look at dealing with your customer bases, all of that. And then not to forget the sort of the basics, which are your internal HR. Obviously, you're going to be processing a lot of employee data, and so that's going to be an important piece. And that will go hand in glove with training. And you, as mentioned earlier, you're going to need to revisit how you work with third-party companies, and that means looking at your supply and customer contracts too. I mentioned we've been having a lot of discussions with the actual enforcers. Just a couple of quotes up there from the person who's taken over from Chris Graham in the UK. So this is Elizabeth Denham. Couple of good quotes just to always have front of mind. Accountability is at the center of all of this. Accountability cannot be bolted on. It needs to be part of the company's overall systems approach. I could have listed a whole bunch of quotes, not just from Denham, but from others around the EU as well. Kinnear in France, the Dutch, the Irish, the Germans. Many of the enforcers have come out really stressing that the whole point of the GDPR is to make people think differently, make businesses think differently. So I put there on the bullet there, comply and demonstrate. That's a really key point. It's not so much a case of just being very good, very diligent, and actually doing some of this and trying to understand what you need to do. You need to think and bear in mind, what are you creating evidentially that if one of the regulators comes, you know, tapping you on the shoulder, comes knocking on your door, what can you do to demonstrate what you did? And so again, certainly what we're hearing, you know, whether it's through working with firms like Pillsbury, or whether it's working with any other firms you may want to work with, whoever you do end up working with, it's a very, very good idea to have some form of reports created, some forms of diligence, some forms of advice notes and memos, and then documenting what you then did, having taken that advice as a business, and then keeping those records to hand, so that when they come knocking, you're able to show this accountability piece. Quite important that, so to do bear that in mind. If you had to break it down into sort of high risk and low risk, I would say certainly if you're a business that processes a high degree of consumer information, you're definitely in the high risk category. Also, if you're dealing with any forms of sensitive data, and I'll come on to that in a second, but sensitive data, there's a new category under GDPR which is known as special data. So if you're processing any of that, that's going to be high risk. And certainly if you are moving data around the globe, as we've mentioned, if there's any international flows of data going on, that's going to be in the high risk category. Low risk, or lower risk, I think it's probably said, is if it's not so much consumer data, if consumer data is only a tiny piece, or you're just really not dealing with consumer data, that can help. But do bear in mind that B2B is not a pass. Obviously, you'll still have personal data if you have contacts at businesses, and you'll have CRM programs and that kind of thing. And also bear in mind that if you've done things, as I mentioned earlier, if, for example, you've started a binding corporate rules process or you've got applications filed already, and particularly, obviously, if you've been lucky enough to get some BCRs through and approved, that will be hugely helpful to you in demonstrating GDPR compliance and obligations. And so that will be a massive risk reduction benefit to you if you've done something like BCRs. Just thinking about how you will be caught, or will you be caught, again, even if you are purely a US-centric business and you are pretty much just focused, you just have staff members in the US and all your operations in the US, you should still ask yourself these key questions. Do you have, or will you be planning to have in the future, any kind of establishment in the EU, in any of the member countries? Doesn't have to be multiple, it could be a single country. Or are you offering goods and services to any data subjects residing in the EU? And really important, the point in the brackets there, even if no payment's required, you do not need to be paid, you don't need to have taken any money for that to kick in. Or are you simply monitoring data subjects? So are people coming to your website? Are you attracting interest? If you're doing that from anyone in the EU, you're going to be caught by this. GDPR will apply. What should you be doing? I think there are at least two pieces to this. In a very simplistic way, you can break it out into thinking about that accountability that we've been talking about, thinking about how you demonstrate that you've conducted the reviews, you've looked at your consents, you've updated your terms, you've looked at policies, you've put in place new policies perhaps if some are missing, you've analyzed data flows, all that kind of stuff. And then obviously your interaction with third-party businesses. What are you doing? What are you saying in your contracts? Have you updated them? Do you need to renegotiate them? And I just mentioned taking a holistic view. This is an important point. So many people are very, very focused on GDPR, very, very focused on, okay, we've got this new regulation, what do we have to do, get into the weeds of it. I would say bear in mind a holistic approach, because that's probably going to be your best path to being efficient, your best path to being cost effective, and your best path at actually ending up with a solution that really works as best or works well with your business. So bear in mind, for example, if you are based in the States, there are new requirements coming out from different states. I've just mentioned one there, the New York cybersecurity requirements. And there are some analogies there. Some of the requirements are fairly similar. So requirements around having dedicated people within the business who are taking charge of these issues, these officers, looking to have a degree of privacy by design baked in, looking on service provider liaison, looking at risks, looking at policies and procedures, notifications, that kind of thing. So if you're going to have to do some of this for certain state requirements, think about how you dovetail that well. Other state laws would apply, California state laws and so on. And I've put there at the bottom of that slide, also bear in mind the sort of the global approach to it. So for example, as I mentioned before, if you were doing BCRs, for example, bear in mind that in doing that, you're not really just fixing a potential problem dealing with how do you move data, say, from Europe to the US, but with something like PCRs, they're now viewed very favorably in other countries around the world. And so you may have a benefit in South Africa, for example, or in Australia, or in Singapore, or in a bunch of these other countries around the globe that are adopting a GDPR or a PCR-flavored approach to things, or at least viewing favorably companies that have adopted that way of dealing with data. So as I said, think holistically. It could be a very cost-effective and practical thing. And I just want to mention from the London angle, from the UK angle, there's been a lot of sort of misinformation around Brexit and misinformation about what's actually going to happen post any Brexit. So a couple of key points there. Specifically from discussing with the actual regulator, with the commissioner, and also from discussing with those in government, what we do know will definitely be the case is come next May when the GDPR goes live, the UK is still going to be part of the EU at that point for sure, and so GDPR will be UK law, will be English law. And so it's going to apply in the UK. And second point is the Information Commissioner's Office and the government have both said that for lots of different reasons, they're not going to change that. So even after any Brexit, that will still remain UK law. It will still be baked in. And so if you have any operational dealings with the UK, don't be thrown by the Brexit angle. It will be law when it comes in, and the UK are going to be retaining it. Okay, so just to get into some weeds now, get into some detail, I'm going to hand you over to Steve, Stephen Farmer, and Steve will now look at some key concepts and some specific issues around controller, processor, and definitions. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Steve.
Thank you, Rafi. So over the next few slides, we're going to take a look at some of the key concepts contained in the GDPR to better understand when it applies, and if so, what that means exactly. So as Rafi mentioned earlier, the GDPR applies to organisations who process personal data within the EU or who are based outside the EU but offer goods or services to individuals in the EU collecting personal data in the process. So the million-dollar question is then, what exactly is personal data? So this is an important question because if an organisation is not processing personal data, then the GDPR does not apply and all the obligations contained within it fall away. So the definition of personal data is set out on this slide. Personal data is defined as any information relating to an identified or identifiable natural person. So this is a more expansive definition compared to the definition contained under the current law. So for example, under the GDPR, personal data is going to include things such as names, addresses, and email addresses, as well as a wide range of personal identifiers such as IP addresses. So this is to reflect changes in technology and the way that organizations collect information about people. So an important point to note for those dialing in from the US is that the definition of personal data also captures opinions about individuals. So in that sense, it goes further than the US concept of personally identifiable information. So in practice, for most organizations who keep HR records, customer lists, and contact details, and so on, the change to this definition should make little practical difference. I guess the key takeaway is here that if you hold information that falls within the scope of the current law, you can assume that it will also fall within the scope of GDPR. So as Rafi mentioned, the GDPR also refers to a subset of personal data called special categories of personal data. So these categories are broadly similar to the categories of sensitive personal data found under the current legislation, although there are some minor changes. So as we can see from this slide, for example, the special categories specifically include genetic data and biometric data, where this data is processed to uniquely identify an individual, and that's different to what we have at the moment. What is similar is that data such as that revealing race, religious beliefs, medical conditions, and so on, that continues to be treated as a special category of data. So what I would say here then is if you are an organization that processes one or more of these special categories, then in summary, you must rely on a different ground on which to do so, which I'll come on to in a few moments. So some other key concepts which are found within the GDPR include supervisory authorities. So these are the national regulators who will continue to exist under the GDPR, and they will be responsible for monitoring the application of it, enforcing it, and issuing guidance on issues of interpretation. Another key concept is data subject. So quite simply, that is the person about whom the data relates. So data controller and data processor is also defined in the GDPR, and it's very important to understand whether you act as a controller or a processor, since the obligations under the GDPR differ depending on which one you are. So as we can see from this slide, a data controller is the organization who determines the purpose and the means of the data processing, whereas the processor is the organization which processes data on behalf of the controller. So if we use an example, Pillsbury's collected email addresses today in the context of the webinar. So in this example, Pillsbury would be the data controller with respect to those email addresses, since we have decided how the email addresses are used. So if we imagine for a moment, and this isn't the case, but if Pillsbury had used a third party to help market this webinar, then that third party would be a processor on Pillsbury's behalf. That third party would not have data but for Pillsbury hosting this webinar. So a sweeping change under the GDPR is that it places direct statutory obligations on data processors for the first time. So in other words, if processors breach the GDPR, they may be subject to direct enforcement by supervisory authorities and compensation claims by data subjects. So this represents a significant change because it dramatically increases the risk profile for entities that process data. Previously, as many of us will know, such processors would have only been liable to the controller under contract. So if you are an organisation that's caught by the GDPR, what does this mean exactly? Well, the GDPR contains a number of principles which those who are caught by it must adhere to. So these principles are broadly similar to those that are found under the current regime. So to summarise, if you are caught by the GDPR, data processing must be legal, fair and transparent, which I'll come on to in a few moments. Data must only be processed for a specific, explicit and legitimate purpose. In other words, you can't collect data for one purpose and then use it however you wish. Data should be processed in a minimized fashion. That means you should only collect the amount of data needed. For example, if I, as a business, want to send marketing emails to an individual, do I need to collect data relating to criminal convictions? Arguably no, and so if I did, I would breach this principle. Data should be kept accurate. That means it should be regularly purged to check it is up to date. And data should be kept for no longer than is necessary. For example, if I cease holding a policy with an insurance company, does that insurance company need to continue holding my data? If so, why? So it's important for organisations to note that data should not be kept, you know, simply for a rainy day. The final principle, data should be kept secure. So this principle is broadly similar to the obligation as it exists under the current directive. So if we look at principle one in a little bit more detail, processing must be fair and lawful if the GDPR applies to you. So what does that mean exactly? Well, in summary, it means that data should only be processed if there is a legitimate basis on which to do so. So there will be a legitimate basis on which to process data. If an organisation has the consent of an individual concerned, the processing is necessary to perform a contract, the processing is necessary to perform a legal obligation, the processing is in the vital interest of the data subject, it's in the public interest, or the processing is in the legitimate interest of the data controller. So in a nutshell, personal data should only be processed if one of these conditions applies. So it's also worth flagging that there are different and narrower grounds which apply where special categories of data are processed, i.e. those categories of data which I referred to earlier. So if you are an organisation processing special categories of data, such as medical data, then these narrower grounds should be considered carefully before any processing takes place. So in reality, there are going to be two grounds which are most frequently relied on to process personal data under the GDPR, consent and legitimate interest. So if we look at consent quickly, consent must be freely given, informed, specific, and unambiguous before it can be relied on. So I guess the key action point here for an organisation looking to rely on consent, once the GDPR comes into force, that is to check whether the consents they hold will meet this threshold, and if not, seek fresh consents where required. looking at legitimate interest. So this is also likely to be relied on to process data under the GDPR. For example, it is in my legitimate interest as an organization to process data for marketing purposes. So I think a key point to flag here is that where legitimate interest is relied upon, this must be communicated to data subjects. And so an organization may need to revisit privacy policies to check that correct notices are given. So that wraps up the whistle-stop tour of some of the key concepts and principles. I'm now going to hand back over to Rafi, who I think is going to explain some of the new rights which individuals will have come May 2018.
Many thanks, Steve. Very helpful. Just to move on into some of the weeds in terms of what's changing with GDPR, we can break these out into a number of different areas. And so one thing just to mention particularly is some new areas around data subject rights. So these new enhanced rights, which will have an impact on business, definitely include some of these points here on this slide, which can be broken down into three main areas: transparency and information. In other words, you have to look at specifically how you're conveying the information to the customers, to your consumers, and so on. Right of erasure and right of portability, these are causing business some concerns. We have a new ramped up right to be forgotten. There was always a requirement not to overly hold on to data in a way that it got badly stale or was out of date. But what's actually happened is we have a new enhanced area in terms of a specific right for data subjects to specifically ask that data be deleted, data be erased out. And so businesses will have to get ready and be in a position to respond to those kinds of objections and requests from data subjects. The other one in particular, which is going to cause business to scratch their heads a little bit, is the right to portability. Now, just to put a little bit of color on this one, if you can imagine, if you imagine you are Hertz, for example, and you have built up data profiles on your frequent rental customers, those data sets will be of some value to you. They will have records as to preferences, typical spend, what the maybe the locations and the countries for the rentals. And so that data set, that data will have a value to you. The data subject does now have a right, or will have a right, to have that data ported. To use the car rental analogy, that will mean that Hertz could be approached by a customer to say, I've been a customer with you for 10 years, but I'm going to switch over to Avis because Avis are incentivizing me to jump ship and to go over to them. And I would like you, Hertz, to assist Avis by giving them in a helpful machine-structured, machine-readable format, as it says on the slide, the data set and data that you hold on me. And Hertz can't object to that. There are some small print aspects that you can look to analyze what you actually present over. But effectively, this right of portability is a new, quite important right that I think businesses are going to have to come to terms with. On the transparency and information provisions, as we mentioned, there's a good degree of detail in the GDPR as to what you're now supposed to be doing. And so if you boil that down into two main areas, you should be thinking in terms of format and you should be thinking in terms of content. So on the format, how are you presenting it? You know, how is it coming across? Is it clear enough? Is it a little bit confusing? Could it be made more concise? Could it be better presented, maybe with some visualization, some graphics, and so on? And these aren't nice to have requirements. These are specific obligations that you now have to be able to go through and tick through to show that you considered, analyzed, and took a view on, and then actioned any improvements that you needed to do on the formatting. On the content side, again, specifically with that piece of it, you need to be looking at what are we then actually presenting in terms of detail. Are we being clear about who's going to receive the information? Are we being clear about why do we want it and what are we going to do with the data? Are we being clear on how that data is going to be moved around and transferred? Are we being clear on how long it is being held and so on? So just bear in mind those two camps of requirements, and in virtually all cases, businesses are going to need to make some changes both to the privacy policies or privacy notices that they present to the outside world and also to guidance internally within the company. I want to quickly mention privacy by design and default, because again, these are two key concepts that have been baked into the GDPR. As I mentioned at the beginning, accountability is everything. And under that general principle, that general umbrella, what businesses are being asked to do is be able to show that they baked into their business processes this concept of privacy by design and privacy by default. By design effectively can be boiled down to showing that you thought about what you needed to do and that you integrated the necessary changes and you built in the necessary safeguards into your business processes. Whether that is anonymization of data or pseudonymization of data, minimizing how much data you take, how much you hold when you clear up your databases and so on. And by default basically means that you're only actually processing the data necessary for each specific purpose. So again, you don't take the kitchen sink approach, you take a much more tailored specific approach to things. I just want to quickly mention impact assessments, because again, there's quite a bit of noise around, do you have to do impact assessments? They're known as data impact assessments or privacy impact assessments or PIAs in some parlance. And again, I'll just highlight that there are obligations to conduct these assessments, but you're specifically doing so if there is a risk involved, if there's likely to be a risk in terms of the processing. And in terms of what does that mean, if you look at the regulation, the examples given are you doing profiling, are you looking at large-scale processing of data, processing of sensitive data, and effectively are you looking at processing data where there is a systematically large-scale area of processing going on. If you are, then you are supposed to be looking at conducting these impact assessments. What I would say is that a form of internal review and a form of assessment in an impact assessment manner is always a good idea in any event, particularly given many businesses are not currently compliant with GDPR. So don't just think, can you wriggle out of this requirement? It would be a good thing to consider doing. Security, just want to quickly mention security. Again, on the security piece, there was always a requirement under the original Data Protection Directive to have what's called T&O measures to a certain degree, that's technical and organizational measures. What this has done with the GDPR is to enhance the requirements. The GDPR actually doesn't give a very long shopping list of specifics, because they didn't want to be heavily prescriptive or overly prescriptive, because they wanted it to withstand the test of time and as things improved. But what you are supposed to do is to look at the risk, what kind of data are you processing, what are the likely risks to that data, and what potential harm could flow from it, and then what could you put in place, what could you implement to reduce that risk. And it's that balancing approach that you really need to be able to demonstrate. To visualize that a little bit, think about risk in terms of what's the expected loss, and then think about what is the threat and what's the vulnerability of your systems and the business. Just mention record keeping. Record keeping is going to be important. You do need to think about how you're in a position to be able to demonstrate to a data protection authority or a regulator, if they come tapping you on the shoulder, how you've been able to store records and how you've been able to keep a record of those processing activities. So again, it's something that the business will have to think about in terms of how they keep such records. With that, I'm actually going to hand you over to Steve just to very briefly touch upon a couple of key takeaways in terms of dealing with service providers. Over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Rafi. So I guess the key point I'd flag here is that the amount of time we're going to spend on this service provider issue isn't reflective on how important this issue is. I guess we could spend an afternoon, if not a day in itself, just dealing with this very topic. There's been some very important changes which have been introduced where data processes are used. In other words, where data is shared with a third party providing a service to the controller. So the GDPR states that service providers can only be used where the service provider provides sufficient guarantees with respect to security, and number two, where the service provider shows expert knowledge, reliability, and resources. So these are all new implications brought about by GDPR. So in a nutshell, I guess the action point for controllers appointing service providers is to ensure that they have clear documentation and recording procedures in place to prove that the required standards are met. Guarantees relating to security should quite clearly be carefully detailed in contract language also. So the GDPR also contains various provisions which must be contained in the contract between the data controller and the service provider. These are contained in Article 28.3 of the GDPR and are boiled down onto this slide in front of us now. So a very important action point for controllers and processors alike is to identify, review, and where necessary, revise their data processing agreements to ensure that they reflect this slide. So in practice, that means that standard terms and conditions which are being used by controllers and processors will need updating, as well as legacy contracts which will be in place post the May 2018 implementation date. So this is an area which is expected to catch many companies out, and it's something which we have noticed many organizations are starting to make provision for now. So without further ado, I'll hand back to Rafi, who's going to say a few words now about data transfers, I believe, another important topic. Over to you, Rafi.
Thanks very much, Steve. So I just want to quickly touch upon transfers because this was a key focus of the GDPR, and in particular, how data is being moved around the globe and what businesses are doing to make sure that they are sufficiently adequate, as you know, adequacy anchors the transfers. So if you take a look at the sort of list of approved countries in terms of countries where the EU deems those recipient countries are being okay in terms of data protection, it's not a very long shopping list. It's a list that sometimes annoys many US businesses because, as you'll have noticed, the US is not on the list. So even though Canada and New Zealand and some other countries are. It was as a result of concerns over how the data is protected that the US was not put on the list and is not deemed to be adequate. Shield was, and I'll come on to that in a second, Privacy Shield was put forward as the reborn, some people unkindly call it the Frankenstein's option that arose after Safe Harbor had been killed off. And Safe Harbor, as you know, was a system that the DOC and FTC used to administer. And when that was invalidated, there was a scrambling around to try and create an alternate option, and the end result was Privacy Shield. The key point to note with Privacy Shield is that it is a form of self-certification, as those who have engaged in it will know. But it also comes with some health warnings and some potential problems. Those who followed what happened with Safe Harbor will know that effectively Europe's top court, the ECJ, invalidated and declared the Safe Harbor scheme as not being adequate and not operating properly, and so was declared invalid. Shield was meant to put in place some alternate arrangements, but we're hearing at the moment that there are some current challenges in the pipeline coming along to Shield, and that there will be also some reviews of Shield coming up. So it's a very unstable and fragile thing at the moment. And so businesses who are looking to move data around would do well to consider whether or not actually there's a better mechanism. In terms of what those other mechanisms might look like, many businesses in the past will have entered some form of contract, standard contractual clauses or model contractual clauses as they're known, MCCs. You can still look to use them, but there are a number of negatives in using them. Some of them which most people are aware of is that they very quickly become stale or can become out of date. Some of the concerns with them are also lawyers can't resist in tweaking or changing the wording. And obviously, if you make those amendments to the provisions when you put a data transfer agreement together, a thing that is sometimes overlooked is that if you can't resist making those tweaks, you then lose the benefit of using them in the first place. And so you're operating then under a false comfort or a false sense of security because they're not then going to protect you if there is an issue or if a regulator audits you. Other points to look at are potential approved codes of conduct or an ability to look at how certain forms of certification might work, but that's very embryonic at the moment. and going directly to a regulator to try and get particular clauses blessed is an option. You can always look to try and do that, but there's a lot of issues around that in terms of shining a light on your business, attracting regulatory attention, sometimes there's significant delays with that and so on. So that's not a great option either. The one area that has been sort of, on that slide, it's sort of described as GDPR blessed, is this area of binding corporate rules, BCRs. Won't be for every business, but certainly if you are a larger organization or if you're even a smaller organization but you have a number of touch points across the EU and you are looking to move data on a regular basis across the Atlantic or in a wider capacity, it's certainly something to very much consider. In terms of benefits, the key issue really can be listed as it's global, not just EEA or EU. It avoids the various problems that you have using model clauses. It avoids the uncertainty of Shield. And once you've done the work, you've done two things really. The prep work for doing a BCR application is actually done and put to bed. You've GDPR complied to a large degree, and what you'd have to do in any event you'll have done. And then going forward, you don't then have the ongoing burden that you would have to constantly update model clauses. So bear in mind that the GDPR specifically makes reference to binding corporate rules, and it might be something to consider. Just a quick point on what you should be doing if you're thinking about BCRs. Just bear in mind that you need to put some intelligent thinking into how do you put a particular application together. And so we've done that for a number of clients, and we're one of the few firms to have actually got some BCRs secured for US clients. And there is, or there are, some tactical things to bear in mind when you go through that process. So if you are seriously interested in that, just bear in mind that you need to strategize a little bit what you do before you go and make contact to the regulators to try and make a BCR application. But it does have many of those benefits, as mentioned. Okay, so on breach, I just wanted to mention a couple of things. Breach can sometimes be confusing. The best way to break down the new breach notification requirements is to think of it in this way. Once you become aware of a breach, ask yourself the question, is it likely to result in risk? If the answer is, in reality, not really, then there's no need to notify. If, however, there is likely going to be some risk, and in particular high risk, then you do need to notify the Data Protection Authority. If there is a risk aspect, you need to notify the Information Commissioner's Office. If you have to do that, the response rate has to be without undue delay or within 72 hours of awareness, and that is a new requirement under the GDPR. If there is a high risk aspect to it, then you also need to notify the data subjects in addition to notifying the DPA, and that requirement is to do so without undue delay. There are some limited exceptions, but that's quite a detailed topic in itself. So if you're thinking of trying to get out of those obligations, it's something to take specific advice on. Just to mention the fines, we've spoken about the doomsday fines. For serious breaches, including accountability, you have this very high level, 20 million euro or 4%. Even for the smaller level items, you still have 2% or 10 million euro, and so a very significant amount still. And I think in terms of impact and practical steps, just think about how you might want to address liability in your contracts. So key takeaways, definitely need to act now. Consider how you can get board level buy-in and budget, whether it's Pillsbury or other advisors you want to discuss putting together a package. We can certainly help do that and give you an idea what should go into a GDPR program. As mentioned at the top, just avoid being distracted by a lot of the noise out there. Just think about considering what you need to do in terms of a specific program with people who can help you focus on what's relevant to your business. Seriously consider BCRs. As I mentioned, some of the benefits of approaching a BCR project actually overlaps with a GDPR program in any event. Think about the practical steps that you would actually put in place. And just beware over-reliance on tools or other cookie-cutter type software solutions that might be presented. Be aware of, obviously, the fine levels. And I think the final bullet point is the key one. there's such a huge amount to go at, it can sometimes be confusing to know where to start. And I think best advice is don't freeze in the headlights. Actually think about some initial small steps, which can be done fairly modestly and very inexpensively, just to have an initial brainstorm around what does GDPR compliance look like for your company in particular, and what could be the initial sensible first steps to take that tailored approach. With that, I just want to say thank you for hanging in there. We've managed to hold on to virtually all the attendees, which is fantastic. For those of you who are interested in your CLE verification code, the code there is on screen. I'll just read it out. So it's 2017-053. And we've actually come in just a couple of minutes early as well. So happy to take any questions if anyone would like to specifically present the same. So just looking, we did have one question just in terms of model clauses. And the question was, will model clauses or can model clauses still be used? What are the obligations on filing model clauses with various authorities? And the answer is yes, you can still look to use model clauses. And yes, there are requirements depending on jurisdictions in terms of permits or approvals. A second question has come in. Just in terms of can we have a view on details regarding contract categories? How would this work with SaaS providers, for example? I think there certainly you could look to still use a form of model contract clause language if you were looking to transfer data out to a SaaS provider, for example. There are different types of model clauses, as you know. I think if you've got specific questions on the actual language or which one would be best or the best fit, then obviously we're happy to take a query offline. So I think just looking at the clock, we're running up to final end time. You have contact information at the end of the slide deck there. Everyone will get a copy of the slides. That will be mailed out to everyone, and I believe there will also be a recording of this webinar too. So if you have any queries, please reach out to either Steve or myself. Happy to take any questions offline, as I say. And thank you very much for your attendance.
Thank you, Rafi. Thank you, Steve.